We have a new intention for 2006 to work with the curriculum of the children's program of United Church of Religious Science to see what we can do to make our faith simpler and more elegant, to become more playful and more joyful, and the word that keeps coming to me is graphic, to bring it into more concrete place, the abstract concepts of science of mind, to bring a sense of understanding that is so clear that we can manifest something into the physical that illustrates it. And so this has been a fascinating challenge to me as I prepare to speak, because it's a really different orientation. And to be perfectly honest, after I got the inspiration to do this and we started talking about having a team do study group instead of my being mostly responsible for it and using a curriculum that somebody else has developed when I've been using the curriculum that I've been developing over the last 3.5 years, there was a sense that maybe there was this was not as creative an experience as I was used to having, and I wasn't feeling comfortable in the change. And I like change because it makes me uncomfortable. It opens new possibilities, and I have to adjust to the new understanding and find, if I'm going to do whatever it is, I have to find that spark within me, that part that feels creative in doing it, or I've reached the point in my life where if it doesn't feel creative and fun to me, I'm not going to do it. So every time, I'm sorry? So every time I make a change, I recognize that it may be an ending. It may be my way of moving into something entirely new and leaving behind something I've been doing. And I wasn't really clear until last night and this morning what this change was going to do for me with the study group. That in the course of making this change, I've not felt as good as I've felt sometimes in the past about preparing and what I was doing and how I was doing it. And knowing that this time there was only a week between the meetings, and that Gail was going to do her meeting and that I wasn't going to know what she was going to do. And she was looking at the same curriculum I was looking at to prepare her part of the meeting. And she ended up doing all of the exercises that were in my part of the meeting. And that was a little challenging. It's like, well, now what am I supposed to do? And so I procrastinated about preparing for this. And Judy helped me feel really guilty during the week because she reminded me that I always take a month to prepare everything. And
I'm so sorry.
No, it was so perfect, Judy. Judy was admiring the fact that I always take a month to prepare for a meeting, and all of a sudden I wasn't living up to my previous reputation. And so I got to process that, for which I am very grateful, Judy. I'm glad for the contrast. And so I put it off and put it off, and every time I looked at it, I looked at the children's curriculum and the teen curriculum, which is actually the one we agreed that we would follow, and I realized that Gail had done all of the things that I planned to do, or would have chosen to do, so that I needed to come up with something new. Ah, that was cool. I like coming up with something new, and so I thought of several different ideas to illustrate what was happening that I'd seen in other programs and that I'd done in other workshops, and several of them fit perfectly, and so I had all these ideas about what I was going to do today, but the talk part wasn't coming together, and so I staked out all day yesterday, cleared my calendar, said, I will focus. And somehow I didn't. And it kept getting later and later, and I'm watching the Redskins game. I haven't watched a football game in 15 years. And I find myself watching part of the football game, and I'm thinking, what is this? And the football game ended, and I said, now I'm going to go to my computer, and I'm going to look at that curriculum, and I'm going to find out what I did. And the power went out. And my computer was down, and I hadn't printed the pages, and I didn't have access to the curriculum. And the power didn't come on until midnight. And I said, ooh, you know, I'm being seriously challenged with my function as a leader here. I'm not doing it the way I'm supposed to do it, in any sense of the words, as I have understood it. So I had to do it from a different perspective. And that gave me what I was going to talk about today. So that was a really good thing. Because what came to me to talk about is how we tell the story of our lives. And if we learn to tell the story when we're children of this is who I am and this is what's happening to me and this is the community I belong to, this is the family I belong to, this is the street where I live, this is who I am. And those details provide the context for the story of our lives. And as we encounter people during the day, during the week, we tell a story about who we are and what we're doing, and it's often concrete. People want to know where you've been and what you've been doing and what you do for a living, and you know, you have all these conversations with people about the physical nature of life, what's happening here. And so we're telling the stories. But when we begin to get it, that we are God in expression as us, that is the truth of who we are, it changes the stories. And if it doesn't change the story, there's something wrong with our integrating that bigger picture of who we are into our lives. It's not something wrong, but it's like there's something separate between this new understanding of who we are and then life as we live it. If we don't change the story that we tell ourselves particularly, but also the story that we're willing to tell each other, then we aren't really becoming that knowing. We're not integrating that knowing. It is not part of our wholeness. Because that is a part of our wholeness. That is really the wholeness of who we are. And so if we just continue telling the story of the physical motion and the activities on the surface, we aren't integrating that bigger picture of who we are. Now, I'm not saying that you can walk up to anybody on the street and say, I am God expressing, and have them expect to have a positive reaction. You know, because if they don't get that, that's cool. But we do have people that we can talk to in that way. You know, we have the people here, and we have each other. And as we begin to talk in that way, some people stop being a part of our experience because they don't want to talk that way. And other people who do want to talk that way become a part of who we are. That's law of attraction in action. It brings who we are, brings to us more of what we're being, what we're focusing on. So the first part of this came to me as what is the story we're telling? That's the first part. Are we telling this from a transcendent perspective, or are we telling this from a local perspective? And watching Friends, most of you know Gail Renwick, and watching Gail Renwick deal with her daughter's accident, and the transcendent way she has handled that experience has been an inspiration to me now for 8 months since Lorianne's accident. And Gail has spoken about that transcendence here several times already. It's a very powerful thing to see someone who is determined to tell the story in a bigger perspective, not getting caught up in the sometimes gory physical details of life, literally in this case, but focusing consciously time and time and time and time again on purpose at seeing the bigger story and telling it from a bigger perspective. When My husband Cliff died, my second husband, made his transition 11 years ago next week. I went to see a psychiatrist every week for almost a year. And what he told me about 4 months into my recovery from this traumatic experience, I came home and found him dead. He was only 39 years old. I'd been away on a business trip. So it was a real trauma for me to go through that. It was an unbelievable shock. And I, talking it over with this very wise, wonderful man, about 3 months in, he said to me, "I know you're going to be well." And I said, "How do you know that?" And he said, "Every week you come in here and you tell me the story of what happened to you." And he said, "I can tell from the way people tell the story whether they're going to get well or not. Because the people who are going to get well, every week the story is different. The people who are going to be stuck in this cycle, every week the story is the same." So the ability to write a new story, to see things from a different perspective, to take a broader perspective on life, is a really remarkable, remarkable thing. To handle changes and surprises and the shocking things that happen to other people in your life, if not to yourself. Because who we love is bigger than just our own life. And we don't control the conditions of what happens to the people around us. But we do have to find a way to hold in our hearts love for the people around us whose lives are changing. And to do that, we have to keep changing the story. We have to keep telling the story bigger. Ernest Holmes said, "Loose the boundaries of your sense of self and let in more spiritual territory." And we need to loose the boundaries of the stories that we tell about each other as well as ourselves. And Gail is such a remarkable example of someone who's been doing that incredibly beautifully with her daughter, Lori Ann. So part of the way you change the story is in the year after I, after Cliff died and I was talking about who I was and what I was doing, I had injured myself in the course of my trauma after what happened to him, and I was in a wheelchair for 4 months and could no longer physically do the job of traveling U.S. and Canada with all of my computer equipment, teaching internet classes and online classes in those days. The story of who I was changed. I was no longer Cliff's wife. I was no longer a teacher of information services. I was no longer a librarian. I had to quit my job because I couldn't do it anymore. And I could tell the story from the perspective, I'm an unemployed librarian, but that really didn't feel very good because that didn't feel like the truth of who I was. It was an expansion of my consciousness into a new way of being. And so to see myself in this new way, I had to tell a new story about who I was. And ultimately, in terms of my career, began to see myself as a self-employed science of mind practitioner, that was my identity as a effective career person in the world. But I've realized recently, a lot of it with David's help, that I'm going through another transition. That the telling the story of my life that I have been doing in the last many years has been about being a teacher. And I have been divesting of myself of most of my teacher roles in the last 6 months. And the changes in the study group are part of that too, because other people are taking the role of teacher here more and more powerfully. And I'm going off to do something new. I'm more drawn to go back to Hawaii to swim with the dolphins next month than anything else in my life. And so what is that all about? You know, it doesn't make sense. And so the other part, the storytelling part, was one idea that I wanted to amplify today. And the other part was, what is our perception of time? And one of the things that happens when we begin to think of ourselves as God expressing, we have to change the timeline of our lives. And so the little craft project we're going to do today is to make clocks, to think about the timeline that we're living on. And so if you look at a clock and you think about your life, you know, where on the clock, if the 12 hours that are visible on the clock face is your life, where on the clock are you now? If you think about that, you know, you might say, well, in my case, I'm 54 years old and I expect to live to be about 80 or so. And so, you know, I might put the time here or something like that. Does that make sense? That's how much time I've elapsed and this is how much I have left. That's one way of thinking about it. But then I thought about the timeline they do for the Earth. Have you guys ever seen that documentary on the timeline of the Earth, where they look at the millions of years of the evolution of Earth from the time it was a fiery ball until it started getting crust on it, and then it started getting water on it, and it started developing an atmosphere, and the atmosphere changed from I forget what it was. The atmosphere was some chemical that is not conducive to life, and then it switched, and it suddenly had an atmosphere that could support life, and the plants were creating more oxygen to put in the air that eventually created an atmosphere that could support animals, and millions and millions and millions and millions and hundreds of millions of years are passing. And they put this whole thing on a clock face. And they say, you know, it took down to 6 to get to the place where any life began to be supported. And then, you know, there were single-cell organisms for this long. Don't hold me to the accuracy of this. And then there were plants here under the water organisms, and then there were animals here. And they get to mankind, humankind, and they said, we are the last second of the last hour since the development of Homo sapiens. We are the last second of the last hour on the scale of the development of the Earth. And I have goosebumps, I don't know about you. But that's a profound thought for me, to think on a different scale. And if you think about what we're really saying here, that we are God expressing, it means that we're eternal. We are even more expansive than that incredible scale of the development of the Earth. I don't know the Bible well enough to quote it right, but before Abraham was, I am, is what Jesus said. Before the earth was, I am. That infinite nature of who we are has been a part of that consciousness that has been thinking all of this into existence from the very beginning, and continues to think as us, looking at this local perspective. As Abraham Hicks says, on the leading edge of thought, with every thought being the birth of the expansion of the universe. That's what we are. So how can we begin to think of the time of our lives? It is such a tiny percentage of the whole of who we are. I mean, it's bigger than we can think in many ways. And yet, if we begin integrating that wholeness into the thought, the story that we're telling of our lives, we have this thing that is bigger than we can think about to integrate into the story. And we can only get this much of it in any one time, but if we do it all the time, if every day we take the time to meditate, to read things about the bigger part of who we are, this bigger picture, if we talk to people about this bigger story, then we begin to integrate this broader perspective. And this is just a broader perspective of time that we've been talking about here. But what time is it in our lives? The truth is, as Abraham says, and as so many teachers say, the time for them in non-physical is the same as the time for us in physical. It's now. The time that we have is always now. Whether we are infinite or whether we are finite, whether we are temporally focused, whether we are non-local entirely, the time is now. The time to appreciate is now. The time to look around and see this group of people who have probably never been in the same room together ever before is now. And so what time is it? You know, we get to choose. What do the hands mean? You know, I had to ask David this morning, which hand is which? I forget. You know, I know how to read a clock, but, you know, it's like, oh, the big hand is on the what? I don't even know right now. You know, which is it? I just know how to do it. I don't remember how it works. But we get to redefine what the scale is of the clock. And every time we tell the story, we get to redefine it. And what happens when you begin to live from a more universal perspective is the time, the relativity of time changes entirely. And just to give you an example of that, I want to show you something interesting. My favorite magazine is Birds and Blooms. It has the most extraordinary pictures of nature that just lifts my heart. And it's the only magazine I probably get 15 magazines, and it's the only one I look at cover to cover every month because the pictures make my heart sing. And sometimes I read the articles, and I get a lot of magazines that sometimes I'm inspired to read an article here or there. But this one I look at because the visual images feed my soul. And when this particular image came in this week, I was blown away by it. I looked at those blue eggs, and I was just thrilled. And I realized I had a blue egg. My shaker egg for music is a blue egg. And it was like the same color and the same shape, and it was just such a happy thing. And I was seeing robins in the trees, and I was thinking about their building their nests and laying their eggs and how they are such a powerful symbol of spring that in this climate, they're here year-round most of the time now, that you can see a robin anytime, that the rebirth happens anytime, that spring is here anytime. It's not conditioned by time. And then I went into the metaphysical bookstore called Chrysalis in Herndon, and the cards, Abraham Hicks well-being cards, were open, and the top card that they were displaying was this one, which has the blue eggs on it. And it was face up, and this is what the card said: I'm not here to fix anything, I'm here for fun. And the backside says, you're not here to fix anything because nothing is broken, but everything is continually changing and expanding. Release your struggle and seek joy and fun. And in doing so, you will align with the fantastic expanding rhythm of this universe. We're born in any moment we choose to be born. The time is now. The choice is ours. And the story we tell about what's happening depends on whether we're expanding or staying stuck or moving backwards. So tell a new story, pick a new timeline, redefine what these numbers, what these things, whatever they are, what do they call?
Arms,
yeah, of the clock represent in your life, because right now is the time we have, and it is really good, and so it is.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I can't wait until the last minute.